I lived in Broadway my sophomore year, and it is also similarly small, but it's like built like a fucking hallway.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, it sucks so bad. And also, concrete floors are like the least... I almost said appetizing, which is really upsetting, and that's not what I meant.
Drew likes floors.
I'm Drew the floor eater.
I don't want to think about appetizing
Broadway. I'm Drew the floor eater.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Out of Phase, presented by Portland State Professional Sound. I am, as always, your host, Drew Havner.
And I'm Beto Carrasco.
And this week we have a very special guest, former Portland State Professional Sound employee and my good friend, Alex Zagarnik. How's it going, Alex? Did I say your last name right? I just realized I should have confirmed that.
You said it perfectly.
Fantastic. We all got to a point where we called you Zag instead of making the attempt.
Yeah, I think everybody had that experience in their life. I had a very cool, catchy nickname in middle school because nobody could pronounce my... Oh, no, you don't want to hear it.
Is it a Russian swear?
No, it's not a Russian swear. It's a Nazi reference.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, we don't want to. We're going to move past that. Yikes. No, when I took over as the staff manager, I had access to everyone's Google Calendar. And, in Google, you can see the sidebar, basically, with everyone's name listed on it. Mm-hmm. And the previous, my predecessor had everyone's name in there. So you'd see, like, Drew Havner, Roberto Carrasco, and then Alex Z. Mm-hmm. And I'm 100% certain it's because he didn't bother to look up how to spell your last name.
Yeah, I just do not care. I mean, that's how kids at work call me. They call me Mr. Z because they can't pronounce my name.
Right. My last name is bordering on that, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not as complex in spelling, and also doesn't sound as foreign. Almost, mm-hmm. But you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Alex, we just essentially brought you on and bullied you about your last name so far, which is really nice.
Thank you. I like that. I like that a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. So what did you do when you worked for PSPS?
When I worked for PSPS, I started, of course, as just a sound tech, but then slowly but surely progressed to the role of the lead audio technician. And I did some gigs. That's what I was doing.
You did some work. I plugged some things in correctly. I feel like 9 times out of 10, and I say 9 times out of 10, this being our 6th recording, so that's not even accurate. Pretty much everyone has been like, said some sort of variant of, I plug things in, or I lift things that are heavy, mm-hmm. which is beautiful.
No. If they did, I've done all of those things.
I did those first.
Yes.
What are you doing now that you've, because you graduated in the fall, right?
Yeah, I graduated in the fall of last year. And I had become a counselor at a mental health facility in Beaverton.
So yeah, he graduated with a bachelor's degree in psychology, right?
That's right,
yeah?
That's right.
Did you have a minor in anything?
No, I did not have a minor. Actually, my interest in psychology started as a minor because I was a computer
really?
Science major. But after computer science major deliberately kicked my butt, I went full-time psychology. Yeah,
I didn't actually even know that. And you also have a degree in music technology, right?
I do have an associate's degree in music tech, which is why I decided to apply for this job in the first place.
Sweet. So what kind of like music do you listen to? What's your like background in music and stuff like that?
God, I listen all things, basically. But my primary driver is metal music. So I listen to a lot of Iron Maiden. I listen to a lot of speed metal and what do they call it? Power metal, like, you know, Dragon Force. I listen to a lot of pop music, but not new pop music, the older stuff, because it makes me sound cool when I talk about it.
I'm so cool. I listen to old pop music.
I literally have a playlist on Spotify. No, not even that. We're not even going there. I have a
Britney Spears is amazing.
Playlist called Remember 1986, which is all of the pop music hits of 1986.
All right. I can get behind that.
That's my guilty pleasure. And I am being mocked by the children for that. Anyway.
I've never actually asked you this. I don't actually know this about you. The rest of these things have been completely leading questions for the sake of the narrative form of a podcast. But
sure.
Why did you pursue a degree in music technology to begin with? Because I don't know that.
Oh, why? Because that's something I really enjoyed. I wanted to become a singer for a very long time initially, right? But what happened with that is that after a few singing classes in my college, Foothill College represented, by the way, I started developing a lot of performance anxiety, and I figured that this was probably not a field for me. So I wanted to do something related to that, so like music production and such. So I started writing music using MIDI instruments in Pro Tools and such. And that kept working. I started mixing and mastering more. And then eventually I graduated because all of it was complete. And hey, there it is. The degree.
You at a certain point were just like, wait, fuck, I'm done.
Yes, yes. Oh, wait, I have no more money to do this. And I'm about to leave this place. Amazing. Oh, well, that time went by fast.
I really thought. Yeah, and the two of you probably saw me trying to stifle my laughter. I thought you were going to say I wanted to be a singer, and then after a couple classes realized I wasn't a very good singer, and I was like, I feel that on an emotional level.
Oh, no, I'm still a pretty good singer. I'm going to brag right there.
One of the very
I just
best.
Don't want to do that.
That's
all.
Fair. Yeah, performance anxiety does make it a little bit difficult to be, you know, a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's start talking about our first thing. We're going to talk about, like, as always, you're going to come to my Nostalgia Corner.
Choose Nostalgia Corner.
I don't know, like, if the editors have been leaving in all of the random bullshit that we do where we talk about the name for this segment. I hope they do, because it's funny to me, but maybe not. Who knows? So this week, we're talking about a song that is, I think, a little bit, like, breaking the mold of what we've been doing. I know that Beto and I are primarily alternative and classic rock people, and like not like classic rock, but like alternative rock from all ages. And Alex mentioned that to me, and I was like, you know what, let's do something a little bit different. So this week we're talking about a song called Blame It on the Boogie by the Jacksons, which is a band that I know very little about, and a song that I know very little about until I researched it today, and it is one of the weirdest and funniest things that I've come across in doing this show for the last couple of months. So, the Jacksons, if the two of you don't know, are the Jackson 5. It's the same band. They just eventually they started going by the Jacksons instead of the Jackson 5. And this is when Michael Jackson was about 20. So, you know, the Jackson 5 started when he was a lot younger, when he was like a kid. So it progressed for a while. This song is on their album called Destiny from 1978, and it's the opening track, and it's a disco song, which I think is one of the reasons why anyone who knows me might be like, this is an interesting choice for you, because I don't really like disco all that much. It's not really my genre of music. I don't know if my coworkers are going to give me shit for that, but whatever. So the Jackson 5. Or, sorry, the Jacksons. See, like I said, they're the later form of the Jackson 5, and it's, for those that don't know, me being one of them, that consists of Jackie, Tito, Jermaine, Marlon, and Michael Jackson. I really don't know a lot about Michael Jackson or the Jackson 5, but I don't know. Do either of you know?
No, I don't know.
This
a
should
lot.
Be a very profound discussion then.
Would you like me to give you the brief description of my
yeah what do you
Michael
know
Jackson?
About Michael Jackson?
So I think all of my knowledge about him ends at about 2011 or whenever he died. Because for me it was basically like this. Oh, well, here's a man with a very high voice, and my parents are going, did you know that he used to be black? Huh, I did not know that.
Oh.
And, and a lot of jokes also surrounding it culturally, you
sure.
know, because Russia,
oh, yeah, I mean, like,
very white. And then he died, and I never really listened to him a lot, so.
Yeah, I also don't know a ton about Michael Jackson. This will be an interesting discussion. So, this song was originally, okay, who do you think wrote this song? This is my fun little game hour that we're going to do.
Their
Who do you
dad.
Think wrote this song? No.
Oh. Okay. Michael wrote it?
His dad.
Hold on. Michael Jackson did write this song.
Makes sense.
Michael Jackson, the white British songwriter, who's not Michael Jackson of the Jackson
what?
5. Yeah.
Wait, what?
This song was written, or sorry, actually not written. This song was originally recorded by a man named Michael Jackson.
That's so weird.
I know. He and for the purposes of this, and also the way that it's usually referred to, people usually call him Mick Jackson, but his name is Michael George Jackson, and he's a British or German I don't know. Most of the things I saw said British, but a couple things said German. So we're going to call him British. He sounds British in his recording anyway. This song was originally recorded by him. It wasn't written by him. I did mistakenly say that it was written by, I believe, his brother and someone else. I didn't write that down, which is unfortunate. But this song was recorded in... It was released in 1978. And I don't know if either of you remember what year I also said the Jacksons version was released in. Because it was 1978. So this is a cover that was released in the same year as the original.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Super bizarre. So the gist of what happened, to my understanding, is that these people wrote this song, Mick Jackson made a version of it, and somehow through the grapevine, the Jackson's manager heard it and was like, oh, we're going to do a cover of that song. Just because they could, you know, they're powerful. I don't think there was any bad blood there. And I don't think there's like any really negative animosity about this. I think it's just more funny. So they were recorded around the same time, and they came out literally within weeks of each other. Because people weren't talking to each other about this. And on the UK charts, because the Mick Jackson version of this was a UK release predominantly, they entered the charts on the same day. Like, they started charting on the same day. And Mick Jackson's version eventually peaked at number 15 on those UK charts. And the Jackson's version of it peaked at number 8. Which is fucking amazing. Like, I this is such an odd story to me that I just found out about. And the fact that they both peaked around a similar, literally on the same charts at the same time, peaking around, I mean, similarly, right? And the Jacksons went on to be the Jacksons. Like, we already knew who they were. They were already famous, but, you know, Michael in particular became even more famous after that. And Mick Jackson that's his song. It's a one-hit wonder, more or less. I listened to the other one, too, because of course I did. And it's kind of more of a funk song. It's a little bit slower. It's a little bit more, like, British-sounding. It's not, like, British, like, really in-your-face British music, but it sounds whiter, which is part of it. I mean, it's a white singer, and it was an all-white band. And it's a little bit more, like, funk, too, whereas the Jackson's version is, like, clearly a disco song. So, I'm not going to play clips of both of these because it was really hard to find the Mick Jackson version. But here's our clip of the Jacksons' version of Blame It on the Boogie.
Don't blame it on sunshine. Don't blame it on good night. I don't know the words. Don't blame it on good times. Blame it on the boogie.
Do you guys have any thoughts on this song as a song?
I loved it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was always like a Michael Jackson song, though. I didn't realize it was the Jacksons.
My understanding is that the Jacksons were like the end of the Jackson 5. Like, I don't really know that for certain, but that was always the impression that I got. It's cool. It's one of those songs that, like, I'm not like a Jackson 5 or Michael Jackson fan, but it's one of those songs that's just good. Like, I was thinking about what I was going to say about this while I made myself lunch, and I was just singing the song to myself. Like, just, it's so, like, catchy and repeatable, and, like, it's disco. It's supposed to be that. But, yeah, it's just, like, really, I enjoy the song just because it's, like, upbeat, and it's fun, and it's catchy. And that's basically all my thoughts on it. What about you, Alex?
I liked it. It's not my go-to, right?
Right, me neither.
But what do you call it? When I was working in the music school, which was also an experience, I actually had to help a kid perform a Jackson 5. I think it was I Want You Back. So I was on the back vocals singing, was it a sorry that I love you or something like this. I don't remember exactly how the lyrics went. But hey, I remember grooving to that stuff.
Yeah.
So
it makes you want a boogie. Yeah, blame it on the boogie. I don't know what this song is about, and I didn't really look into it. I don't think it's like an important part of the conversation, and that could be totally wrong. It's just that wasn't what I focused on. I was going to look into what the song was about, and then I got so tied up into the crazy, weird, funny story that precludes this song's existence. But for me, this song is I think notable in that, like, I mean, like I said, like anyone who knows me would probably be like, that's a weird song to have picked for you to discuss as a nostalgic connection, because I don't really do disco. My connection for this song really like stems from a specific experience that I have in my memory. So like a little bit of background about me. In high school, I spent a lot of my time in the theater department there, like as an actor. I was there for 4 years. I was the only senior actually in my graduating class who had performed in every single show. There are a couple of other people who like weren't in like one, or for whatever reason, like they did something else. There was a scheduling conflict. So I ended up being the only one who acted in all of them. And I also spent 2 years more or less working on the technical side of stuff, which is actually part of the reason that I ended up applying here, is because I was like, I liked doing this. I like music. These skills are transferable. I owe a lot of what I'm doing now and what I'm interested in and who I am to working in that theater department and being an actor and being a technician. Acting was like the first thing that I ever really developed a passion for, which is cool because now I know what that feels like and I know what it's like to like want to give my all to something and be interested in it. And for a long time, I wanted to do that professionally. And then I realized I had a similar experience in which I realized I'm not very good at this. Not to say that that was your experience, Alex, but I was like, I'm fine, but I can't sing very well. I can sing fine, but I can't dance at all. So like, it's really hard to make a living as a professional actor if you're not, if you can't, you know, read music and have classical training and dance as well. And I just can't really do any of those. But, you know, I was, you know, for a high school level, I was pretty good at it. So I enjoyed doing it. So my junior year, our like head of the department, our director, announced that he was retiring. It was like kind of a stag. Like he would be there the next year doing a little bit, but he was not going to be like the head of the department anymore. And he is a really, really kind, very like wise, kind of like laid back, chill dude. And we all really liked him. So we were devastated when he was leaving. So it was, you know, like it was a sad experience. I mean, it was the best for him clearly, but it was rough. And then just before my senior year, I was doing some training, and I was in our auditorium, and I happened to meet the person who was filling that position for my senior year. And you know, we got to talking, and I liked her, and she seemed like she was going to be a good replacement. And then over the course of that year, I became really close with this new director, and I found myself in also kind of a leadership position within this like small community. And I got to a point where I was basically like, for a majority of things, the like her right hand man. Like if something needed to happen, and it needed to be one of the students that did it, like build this piece of a set, or get someone to build this piece of a set, or get this person to do X or whatever, I was the person that did that. Like I along with a couple other people, there was a couple of us who were just like the like fixers, the like we're gonna get this shit done because it needs to get done kind of a thing. And she also became kind of a mentor to me, which was also a new experience in my life. So it was a very important time in my life. And it also was really helpful because in the past, this group had been kind of a host to like, I wrote down toxic, but that seems unfair. Just like a group of teenagers in a theater department who aren't always the nicest to each other. And I don't want to say toxic because these people are like not bad people and they're not currently bad people. And like, I still know some of them. And I was a part of that group, and we were not great and kind of shitty to people, and that group kind of disappeared because they didn't like this new director, and I was one of the few people who stayed on, and I got the chance to like step up and be a leader and be a better person and learn how to not, you know, like make fun of people and like genuinely try to be a good person. And it also felt good because I ended up with, this is when this is going to start sounding braggy, but I ended up with people who like looked up to me, and that was also a new experience. And having that connection, those kind of connections with people instead of negative connections with people, was something that was new to me, and I realized that it was a much better way to live my life. So after I graduated, at the end of my freshman year in college, in the spring, I went back to watch the, like, end of the year sketch comedy variety, whatever the fuck show, like, just weird creative clusterfuck that we had done the year before and had since become, like, an annual thing. And going there, it was really cool to see all these people because I hadn't seen them in a while, and people were excited to see me, which was really, like, good for my emotional state after going through a freshman year that was kind of rocky in terms of personal relationships. And the reason where this song comes in and isn't just me talking about how cool I was in high school, because I fucking wasn't, I was in a theater department, I got called up on stage during this show for one of these, like, interactive bit, whatever, and it was because people saw that I was in the audience. They were like, you have to get him because we want to embarrass him, kind of a thing, like a, you know, ribbing kind of thing. And basically the short of it is that there were these two people who pulled people up from the audience, and it ended up being me and a buddy of mine who like was still at that school but couldn't be in the show because she was doing something else, who was a year younger than me. And these, like, people in mime format taught us this, like, simple dance with no music and no context and no communication other than, like, just showing me how to do it. And I was like, okay, whatever, I'm gonna go along with this. And eventually I realized that, and when I say I realized, I recognized when music started playing that I was supposed to do a dance to this song with this group of people that appeared out of nowhere, a bunch of people that I knew and I was friends with and hadn't seen in a long time and hadn't performed with. And it was this song, it was this Jackson song that I was like, so basically, I'm standing up on stage, having had a rough year in terms of personal relationships with a group of people that I love and I know they love me, dancing in front of an audience of like 100 people, looking like a complete dipshit. But it was great. Like it was so dumb and so like fun to do and also kind of embarrassing, but like it felt good to lean into that and like be around people that I trusted in that way. And also, it felt good to perform with people because I like performing. I mean, there's a reason I volunteered to host this podcast. I enjoy performing for people. And it's something that I don't get as much in this line of work anymore. But it was also like the last time that I got to, it was the last time that I was on a stage doing a performance, like still to this day, like 2 or 3 years later. And it's just a good memory. It's like a little kind, positive memory, which I think is the kind of thing we need in this world of like, I remember this time where we were connected and it was fun and I felt loved and all that kind of stuff. And this song, every time I hear it, reminds me of that because it was a song that I did a silly mime dance to with a bunch of teenagers one time. And it sounds way better if I put it that way.
Makes a lot of sense.
Right. Yeah. You know, that entire convoluted, I was cool in a theater department and I like this song.
said no one ever.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, as I was writing this, I was like, is this going to make me come off as pompous, trying to be like, oh, it's cool because I was part of a theater department. And then I realized, no, I'm telling people about how I was like a high-ranking, get-or-done person in a theater department. Like,
that's different.
In a high school theater department.
Nonetheless.
Right, yeah. Really, really cool. I love theater. Nice. I'll always love theater. I want to do it again someday. Mm-hmm. But I can't sing and I can't dance anymore.
So now we'll pass it on to our guest Alex, and he'll talk about why music makes us sad.
Hi, and welcome to my TED talk. it's about why we listen to sad music when we are ourselves sad. So I guess I'll just give a little prelude to that. I am a sad person, just in general.
Podcast material.
But seriously though, I have been struggling with depression for a very long time, and it's chronic, and sometimes it's, you know, it's pretty bad, and sometimes it's like this, where I interact with people and do things.
Isn't it nice?
It is very nice when you're able to do that. Yes, indeed. And so, of course, one of my main modes of relief is listening to music, because I love music. Music makes me feel good any time of day, apart from the times when it's music I do not understand or do not like. like something that I have been meeting at my job quite frequently recently, is that the boys, they are allowed to request certain songs to be played on the speaker, and there would be like a rap track playing, and it plays, and then the next rap track comes along and it sounds identical. And they'll be like, oh, dude, look, listen to this. This is good. This is high quality, they tell me. And I'm like, I don't know. I just have to believe you. Maybe you're right.
You're such an old man.
I am an old man.
And it's okay, because I am too, and I get it.
So, yeah, but getting back to the topic, listening to sad music makes you feel better. I think everybody here and everybody who is listening right now had that experience where they're struggling with something, they're going through a depressive episode, or they are just feeling down and they turn on the radio, or they will set up their Discman or LP player or what
have
you.
Those are the only ways that you listen,
to music. It's Discman, LP, or radio. Nothing else exists.
Well, also 8-tracks, you know.
8-track, the most popular medium of music.
I'm surprised that 8-tracks haven't made a comeback the way cassettes have, by the way.
Yeah, that is true. But in any case, so you open your Spotify. Here we go, we found it. you open your Spotify, and for example, I just have a playlist that's called Sad. This is where I put all of the songs that make me feel, that make me kind of, how would I even describe it? That I relate to the feeling of being sad. Like, I have a couple of songs prepared. I brought 3 tracks for you maybe to listen at some point. Some of you may have already heard it because these are pretty popular songs, apart from one, which I can almost bet neither of you heard before.
Absolutely not.
Russian. It is Russian, and you've probably never heard it. But so the first one that I, how to say, this is literally the first song on my playlist. It's called, it's El Mañana by Gorillaz, right? But yes, yeah, so El Mañana is the number one. I listen to it pretty much all the time. I related to, how to say that, there's been plenty of moments in my life, especially in my early adolescence, or maybe I would even say young adulthood, which I'm totally not. You can hear that I am past my young adulthood. But
you're on the downward slope now.
Everything is downhill from here. So when I was a teenager, I was going to high school, I would listen to it a lot because I was a depressed little boy all the time. So it helped me out a lot. Then the next song, not in the playlist, but that I brought, is Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult.
This song, I've never looked at the lyrics to this song, but I've heard it a lot. Is it about not fearing death? Because that seems like the very obvious.
So, I'll just give another one thing, is that most of my, most of the songs on that list, they have a overarching theme of loss or suicide. So the song Don't Fear the Reaper is about suicide. It's about a girl who broke up and she's contemplating killing herself, and she hears this voice, hey, don't fear the Reaper, and in the end, she kills herself. That's basically the song.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you never heard it...
I didn't know that. Yeah, kind of a weird song for SNL to make a very popular skit about.
Yeah, I guess so, but yeah, but the lyrics go, the curtains blew and the wind appeared, something happened, and then he appeared saying, don't be afraid, and she ran to him, and they started to fly. You know, that's the song, yeah. Because it's basically death extending his hand and saying, don't fear, baby, take my hand, I will teach you to fly and such.
Sure, yeah.
That song, I've discovered it for myself in 2018, I want to say, because I've started having really strong depressive episodes at that time, and I was listening to new stuff because like nothing regular that I had was helping out anymore, And I found that song and I really connected with it because for some reason, like, it has this very, very specific tempo and the lyrics. Like, it kind of helps me transfer my sadness into sadness for the person in the song. And that's how it helps me. Yeah, and then the third song is by a band named Sprained Leg, which sounds like a punk band or like
it
a
totally
ska band.
Does. That's what I was expecting.
But Sprained Leg, it's a Russian band. Its actually, Russian name is Nogu Svilo, which means basically translates to "I sprain my leg" or something like that. And the song's name is "Our Young Funny Voices."
You translated it to me as "our youthful funny voices."
Our youthful funny voices. Okay. Is appropriate. Yes, it's our youthful funny voices, and it's basically, to kind of recap the lyrics, it's about dead people who are in the morgue, and it's their perspective on the things, and it talks mostly about like the lyrics. They're very much about being dead. So yeah, one of the verses goes, "We're going to go like the products in the fridge, and we will embrace and we will fall asleep forever. And as its last goodbye, the dim light will smile at us with its dim light." You know, it's basically, that's the lyrics. And I first heard this song when I was very young because it was one of the top charts song in Russia, early 2000s. I don't remember exactly when, but thinking about it today, I kind of reopened my understanding of what the lyrics meant. And it turns out, from my perspective, that this song is more about anti-establishment song, because most people don't know this about Russian culture, but we have drafts and like military drafts, and you have to serve. If you are a male, when you reach the age of 18 years old, you get a letter in the mail saying that you have been drafted. Please report to this and this drafting facility where they will medically assess you and they will send you to serve. And
unless you're in like college, right?
Yeah, unless you're getting education at the time, you have to serve. There is no way around it. You can also continue, like a lot of people do it this way. They continue staying in school until they're 27. And once they are 27, they no longer become eligible to serve, because at that point, you cannot do a lot of change when it comes to physical and mental attitude. Because, you know, as in any country, the military's purpose is, I'm not going to go there because we're probably going to have some.
We're going to just keep diving down. We're just going to lean into this. Like, this went from, we're going to talk about disco to the most serious fucking podcast.
Yeah. Yes. It's pretty interesting. And the music video for that song is like, what makes me think about it? The music video for that song is, it's four men, which are the band members, in black suits representing, like, you know, the funeral. They are standing in the middle of the forest, and then they start digging the grave. Like, they start digging a really deep hole. Then later, four men in military outfits come in, and they throw those four men into the hole, and they start covering them with the dirt. And from what I understand, the connection between the music video and the lyrics, like, they're talking about dead bodies. They're saying, like, there's an evil maniac walking around looking for its next victim. And he decides what is their fashion sense as they go away. And I started, and I connected, and I was like, shit, this is an anti-military song. They're speaking about our youthful, like, because the verse goes, people will never hear our youthful funny voices again. The only thing that will hear them is the heaven. And then people will never remember our youthful funny names. The only thing that remembers them is silence. And that's basically, It represents exactly that young man. They go to fight a war that they have no say in, and then they die, and they never are heard from again, or they are never remembered because they never got to achieve anything. Yeah. So that's
God, it's a brutal. I obviously didn't understand the lyrics because I don't speak Russian, but that is watching the music video. I was like, this is real dark. Like this is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really good though.
Your sad music is different than my sad music. I sent a sad music about like a girl or something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So why do we do that? Why do we listen to sad music to like, is it a cathartic thing? I mean, I know in my experience it is. It's a catharsis, like, you know, like picking a scab or sure. the turning of the knife kind of a thing.
So you will, that's actually a common idea that people have when they think like, oh no, you're listening to sad music. You're just feeding yourself more sadness.
Sure.
And that's how people think it is. The reason is actually like, and I will just, let me just flail my bachelor's degree in front of your face and say there has been research done on why we listen to sad music. There has been scientific research where I think they took two groups of 38 women. One of them was the women diagnosed with major depressive disorder and the healthy control group. And they were basically coming from, like, you know, same background, so like middle class, white American women. And they have conducted the research where they were playing depressive music and non-depressive music. And people who have been diagnosed with depressive disorder have been choosing sad music. And then there was, of course, post-experiment discussion and debriefing and such. And what they have found is that in many cases, the reason why we choose sad music when we are feeling sad or feeling depressed is because its low tone, its vibrance, its tempo, they're very soothing. And that makes us feel caressed in a way.
That's interesting, because I would have never, ever, ever guessed that. Do you know how that like translates to angry music when you're mad?
Yeah, sure. I did not do research on angry music when you're mad, but I will tell you like this. I also suffer from anger management situations, and what happens is that I would put there's this one specific track that always gives me the relief, and that's BFG Division by Mick Gordon, which is soundtrack for Doom 2016 Doom.
Oh, okay.
And that song is so high, has such a high intensity, and such, you know, like, it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever listened to it, but the tempo goes.
Yeah. I think both of us played Doom, right?
Yeah.
Played Doom, Beto?
Yeah, I played Doom.
Yeah.
And it is such high intensity, and there is so much happening that for me, what it does, it auditorily exhausts me in a positive way. Like, it helps me burn out. So whatever I'm dealing with, if I'm feeling mad and enraged, I listen to it and I'm like, I would think about it and how it connects to it, and then by the time it's done.
Yeah, instead of trying to put out a fire, you're like,
yes,
making the fire burn itself out through that. I think it's really interesting to think about how music, you can use music to manipulate and alter your mood. Because I know that for me, one of the most prominent, other than like the universal experience of like, oh, I'm sad, I went through a breakup, or I don't have depression, so I can't relate to it on that level. But I know that when I've been really sad in my life, like after losing someone or whatever, listening to that sad music does help. But I think that the experience that stands out more for me is when I work out, I listen to specifically, there's this band that's like a like thrash punk band from the early 2000s called Rise Against, that is like I don't think it's bad, but I don't think it's the best music, but it is like aggressive, in your face, like really high BPM, and I listen to it when I work out because it motivates me. Like, I'm just angry when I'm working out, so I'm like, I'm gonna run another half a mile, I'm gonna do it, because like I'm just fucking, I'm not mad at myself or anything in particular, but it's just, and I think now that looking at it that way, it's more about the intensity of the music than it is actually about the emotional connection to the music. I'm not actually angry. I'm not mad at the treadmill or whatever the fuck. I'm just like, this is pumping me up in a way that makes me want to push further.
Exactly. Sure. Like, for example, I have another playlist on Spotify. It's called Battle Mode, and it's literally, I know.
That's a really tacky, really good name.
It's called Battle Mode, and I just put a lot of Dragon Force music in it because it is so high energy that it just, like, it keeps me, like, going. Like, I'm on a highway, I work in a mental health facility. Sometimes I work 15 hours a day. Sometimes I get out of Sometimes I get out at 4 a.m. and the highway is empty and I am sleepy as hell. So I put on some Dragon Force music to keep me going and I floor my car because it's empty and there is nobody around and it's a highway and no one gives a shit. And it's so helpful. Like, it's very helpful, but totally illegal, but so helpful.
Totally not advisable, and we don't condone it.
I do not condone high-speed driving. It's not okay. But when you do that, you feel really good. That's all I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, that connection between, like, I mean, there's an obvious and inherent connection between music and emotion, because most music comes out of emotion and is trying to produce another emotion, even if it's like what people would probably point to, like pop music, like it's still trying to produce an emotion of like happy or excited or in like into the music. And I think it's cool to like deconstruct that from the back end, you know, like why am I reacting to this music, this song, this type of music the way that I am? Is it, and I'd never really thought about it as like an actual connection to something tangible about the music, like BPM or tonal quality or sonic aesthetic or anything like that. And more just like a, well, I'm sad and this sad music helps me because it's cathartic, like feeling that more. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's like the definition of cathartic?
Like feeling bad, but in a good way. Cathartic, providing psychological relief through the open expression of strong emotions.
Basically facing your own emotions through the medium of music. You're listening about something specific. Yeah. You relate it to how you feel, and that's what you think it is.
It a really good example, not a music example, but of catharsis would be like crying something out. Like, I'm sad and this feeling is pent up inside me, so I'm just gonna let myself cry and cry and cry and cry until I stop crying, and then I'll feel better about it.
Interesting.
It's the emotional version of making yourself throw up when you're nauseous so you're not nauseous anymore, kind of a thing.
And when it comes to like that type of music, I usually look for like some type of lyrics that like makes me feel like, it's a weird, I don't know if it's like a phenomenon or it's like in my head, but it's like, oh, maybe they felt something like this. Like finding would that count as a cathartic?
Catharsis? I don't know. I'm also not the psychologist.
It's like related. It's like, I find like comfort in like, oh, you felt this as well.
Definitely. Know? Yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's easier. It's kind of like, you know how group therapy can be a great coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. So you meet someone who went through the same experience, and by establishing that relationship, no matter how strong or weak, and by having this connection, it makes you feel better because you know you're not the only one going through this.
Yeah. And I think that's a good word to use as well. Like, you do establish like relationships with like the music that you do listen to. So I could understand why, if like, especially if you're like listening to somebody who's like talking about, you know, like emotional things all the time, you might be like, oh, wow. Like, wow, I get this. Yeah. I get you. You get me.
Establishing a connection with something allows you to know that it's okay that you're that way. You know,
like, yes.
Hey, we brought it back around to something that is thematic amongst both of these segments. Now, Beto, it's your job to make your segment about this. Now, Beto's going to tell us about, and he told me to say it this way, rock and Espanol.
All right.
How was that?
That was perfect. Wow.
It wasn't, but thank you.
I totally know what you said, though. It worked.
Okay, that's good. I mean, I took a lot of French, and it's a similar language, so.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of my knowledge about, you know, rock en español. It's more than just, like, you know, literally Spanish saying
right,
rock in Spanish.
Right, I would imagine.
Yeah, but it's like a... I guess you could like qualify or like you could describe it as a period in time or like a movement. Like another one would be like rock in your language, but also in Spanish, like rock en tu idioma. But I mean, like, you know, like it's not like it's something super nuanced or anything, you know. Like
rock in Spanish.
It's Spanish, yeah.
But like, no, to clarify, I mean, you're talking about like Latino rock, right? You're not talking about like Spanish rock, right?
I'm talking a little bit about both. It's hard not to see how how like they're interconnected. If we talk about rock in general, it's, you know, like from the United States, but that's also over here, you know, like, and like Mexico and the sure. United States, they share that. And then, you know, Britain had the British invasion and everything. So it's like, it's all this interconnection.
It's not the compartmentalized thing that I want it to be.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to think about rock in Spanish, rock in Español, there's like no other better example of like, you know, like, here's an OG in the rock in Español scene. You know, just think about Richie Valens in La Bamba. Mm-hmm. You know, in case you don't know it, here it is.
This is one of the five Spanish rock songs that I guarantee you all white people know. Here's the thing. I don't know what the other four are, but I guarantee you we could find four.
Yeah.
La Bamba's a good song, though. Like, it is important in terms of, like, the history of rock music.
You know, it was written by Richie Valens. You know what? Let's give this man a shout-out for his real name. I think Richie Valens is actually his stage name. Oh, yeah. Richard Steven Valenzuela. Mm. He's, like, a Chicano from California.
I didn't know he was American.
He's
I guess I don't know that ton about him.
Yeah, no, he's like a Mexican American up here. Y'all know the legend? Do you guys know the legend? Like that freaking urban legend?
Maybe.
Like spooky. All right, so basically it was, okay, do you guys know who Buddy Holly?
Yes,
Big
yes,
Bopper?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
You're gonna talk about the plane crash, yeah?
The plane. Yeah. Alex, do you already know?
You'd have to invite me on this.
All right. So here you go. I guess they were like, okay, you know, I'm not a pro, I'm not an expert, but this is what I know. This is the legend that I've heard, is that they're like playing the show in this cold ass place. Mm-hmm. And like, they're like sick. And they're just like, oh man, like something about their bus breaking down. Like their bus was broken down. Mm-hmm. And like their manager or something was like, you know what, guys? Hey, these dudes are like offering us a ride on their plane, but there's only like certain seats, you know, the rest of you are going to have to wait for the bus to like get fixed so you can like continue on tour. They're like, let's flip a coin. And these guys like flip a coin to see who's going to get on the plane ride, right? Mm-hmm. And Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and Big Bopper, they like win coin toss and they get in this plane and the plane ends up going down.
This is actually,
and, like,
how they
all
die
at this part. Yeah. And then that's how they died. Like, the dude was like super young. Like, Richie Valens was super young. He was like,
Buddy Holly was in
his
like
a teen.
30s? No, 20s?
I don't know. I know that.
Yeah, that's
was
like actually
teenager.
How they died.
Yeah. That's insane.
Oh, he died at 17. He died at 17.
Richie Valens was 17?
15, yeah. It's like an old ass man in his picture.
Yeah, I was like, I'm looking at the like singles album. Or the album that La Bamba is on, because I was just briefly listening to it. He looks like he's fucking 40. I mean, not to speak ill of the dead, but I would have never guessed.
There's some kids like that in my high school. But anyway, moving forward, you know. So we had these like Chicano artists playing, you know, music in Spanish, which was pretty cool, like, especially that time period, during that time period, like hearing like rock music in Spanish. Well, that sets off a thing, you know, like a lot of like different cultures start doing rock, you know, mm-hmm. which is dope or whatever. But I guess if I'm going to talk a little bit about it, I guess I'm a little bit focused on Mexico, because some of the stuff that I'm thinking about is more what happened in Mexico. But, you know, we had like Woodstock in the 60s. We had some like killer, you know, psych scene, these like revivals or whatever. And it was great. It was great. You know, we had a bunch of new music. We had crazy psychedelic rock. We've talked about that on here before, which is great. But during the 70s, it turns out that like Mexico, like the government of Mexico was tripping out. It totally narked out and was like, they were like censoring things. Like they became like super wild and they basically outlawed rock and roll. You know,
really?
Like, yeah.
The Mexican government for a long time was a single party, technically authoritarian regime, but I didn't know they did that.
And it was in response to like student protests and everything. So it was like directed at the youth. So they outlawed like rock and roll. dude. And it was wild. Like, a lot of music wasn't really being produced during this time. Like, it's kind of scary, you know? They genuinely, like, suppressed art. Like, they were like, you will be punished, you know? But you'd have to look into more of that, you know?
How do you go about saying, like, this genre can't be played, though? Like, how do you go about... Because that's such a specific... Like, genres are not a very compartmentalized category. I mean, I guess at the time, something that was rock music would probably stand out a little bit more because, like, the fluidity between genres was not as immense as it is today. But the enforcement of you can't play rock. It's like, what's keeping someone from, like, oh, well, we added some horns and now it's jazz. Like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think through the logic of an authoritarian regime, which doesn't make sense. So,
yeah, it would be like things like freedom of speech or like counterculture. So, like, for example, during this time period, there's this band, this heavy metal band that developed in northern Mexico. They're called El Ritual, and they're like straight edge. They like try to be hella edgy. Like, like one of their songs is literally called Satanás. Like,
which means what for me who doesn't speak Spanish?
Devils. It means devils.
It means Satan.
Oh, plural Satan. Satan. That makes sense.
Well, no. The name Satan is Satanás in Spanish. I guess we should play a clip. Like, just listen to this. Yeah, so after listening to that, you can see why, like, something like this would be like, oh, it's too wild, like, too scary, you know? But now we get to what we're talking about, which is rock en español, right? And, dude, this hit in the 80s. This is, like, post all this, like, censoring or whatever. So, like, and it's in the 80s. It's my favorite, like, already. One of my favorite, like, time periods for music, so.
I would have never guessed.
Yeah, especially with these bands, the post-punk segment never faded away. So it's the 80s, right? Freaking new wave is on the rage. We got The Cure playing. We got these post-punk bands playing. We're getting real trendy. We got synths now. We have freaking crazy hairstyles. We're wearing makeup. All the good stuff, you know? And during this period, not just like Mexico, but like Spain starts to, they started saying like, yo, you know what? Like, we've been doing so many covers of like rock music. Maybe we should start doing like our own type of things, you know? And it's kind of cool. Like a lot of like early genres, I have nothing to back this up, but like sometimes it seems that like when another culture tries to do like music from another culture, they try to like imitate it and make it, you know, like they're like, oh, I'm gonna make something that sounds like this music, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like yeah, it's cool, you know. And
that's how good music gets made, to be fair. Like, that's, yeah, Kurt Cobain, when writing Smells Like Teen Spirit, was basically like, I want to write a Pixies song.
Okay, that's how the genre of country was born, if you didn't know. Yeah.
It's white people being like, I like what those black people are doing.
Yes.
We're going to make that, but
exactly.
White.
Oh, like the blues?
Yeah, they basically were like, okay, the blues, but sung by white people. That was originally in the conversation about blues versus country. Well, that was the... In terms of like the historical like difference between the two, and you talk about it as music history, that's the signifier in a lot of cases.
They
sound different now. I'm not saying
what era are you talking about?
Like the early, like the 60s.
I'm talking about the 1800s.
Oh, okay. See, this is a different time period.
Yeah, The 1800s replication is literally the one white man. I don't remember his name, but I'm gonna make a reference. Listen to the Nod podcast about country music. Sure. I think it's the Nod. This man, he heard the... Actually, you know what? No, I could be wrong. It could be The Daily by the New York Times. One of those.
I don't know. Go find it.
But there was a podcast about this where they talked about how a white man overheard like the more like communal songs that black slaves were performing. And he's like, this sounds really good. I think everybody else should hear it. And he basically tried to replicate it But yeah, so now I'm just gonna say, if anyone ever says that country is a white genre, just tell them. Let me remind you that banjo is an African instrument. So goodbye.
Banjo an African instrument. Okay, sorry.
Banjo is an African instrument. Sorry.
Back to music en español.
I apologize. I apologize for that departure.
All right, back to it. All right. So, dude, during this time period, bands start popping up, right? And one of these bands, like, they have like a more urban sound. They're like, oh, like. So a lot of like the popular like rock and Espanol bands that came out in Mexico were from Mexico City, because, you know, it's the city. Yeah. And one of these is like my all-time favorite bands on the record. It's recorded. Caifanes. And I think Caifanes is like a slang term. Like, it's like something about like about your like neighborhood, I think is what I've heard. Like your barrio. Barrio is like hood in Spanish, pretty much, or whatever. They are like what I like to call the Mexican Cure. The Mexican The Cure, not the Mexican.
Yeah, you gotta
cure.
Get it right.
The Mexican The Cure. Yeah, I mean.
Ooh, that sounds really bad, actually.
Uh-huh. I yes, got that. Sounds really bad.
It's cool. It's cool. I'm brown.
yeah, it's good that you said it and not the two of us.
And then. I mean, just like listen to this song, all right? They wanted to. If you ever want to look at to see more, what I mean, like look at their first album art, the first albums, like yeah, you'll see. But here's the song, "Mátenme porque me muero." Yeah, these kids are edgy. These kids are edgy. I mean, if you
these
don't
definitely
speak
40-year-olds.
No, like they're now. Like young. Yeah, no, I got to see them in California last year, actually. It was kind of sick. I got to finally see them. They're old men now, but they're still bopping. But no, these kids are edgy. Like, if you don't speak Spanish, like a lot of like the song material. I mean, "Mátenme porque me muero" translates to "kill me because I am dying."
God, yeah. That's so good. That's so on brand for the genre.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Honestly, so a lot of these guys, like what these guys are like accredited to, like inspiring a lot of that like resurgence of like, you know, like rock music in Spanish. Like it just inspired a lot of bands, a lot of like Mexican bands, just be like, oh damn, like these guys are doing it. It's tight. You know, they're getting like. They're not just being like popular in like their own country. Like they're like, oh, like man, we're digging it over here in Spain, dude. Like, oh, we're digging it over here. Like anyone who spoke Spanish was probably like, aye, this is kind of cool, you know? So I don't know. It's kind of sick. I guess to follow it up with like the post-punk 80s vibes, you'd have to like pass it over to Spain. And they had this like great band come out of there called La Unión, which is, you know, the Union. They're cool. And they have this sick song called, man, they're weird. Okay. Spanish, they're like, they don't say hombre lobo, which is like werewolf. I don't know. I say hombre lobo, but they say lobo hombre, which is werewolf.
Love that, because my limited knowledge of Spanish tells me that that translates not to werewolf directly, but brother wolf or man, wolfman, right?
Wolfman, yeah. Yeah, it's
amazing.
Weird. But,
I guess that's a pretty accurate translation. That keeps with the theme too. Like if you compare that to our conversation a couple weeks ago about this genre in America, like that's the same kind of theme and imagery as the Killing Moon, which is an incredibly popular new wave like post punk song.
Yeah, I mean this one is really poppy. I mean, just take a listen. So there we go. Listen to that. Wow. I mean, it's a pop song. It's post-punk. It's like new wave is what I would call it.
It's honestly. Definitely
it's
new
around
wave.
That. Yeah. So it's like it is very contemporary for that time period. It is like very much like on the dot with what with what's going on around them as well, or who's like being popular right now. I don't know, I think it's like a good as a song as like something like The Cure would make, or like something like these people would make, or this artist would make. It's not like I like The Cure more, but I would say that
about pretty much any music for you though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. So yeah, I mean that shit's sick. You know,
it reminds me a little bit like Sonic Youth almost.
That's the 80s. So this, we see this resurgence and we kind of see it in like, you know, like just like the post punk, like the hipness, the newness, and it's kind of sick. I'm like, all right, I can dig it. You know, then we get to the 90s. These same bands are still making music, and Caifanes, you know, another shout out to them. They keep making like album after album. They get like psychedelic, and we start seeing though, like, I have a focus in Mexican bands, but like we start seeing that these bands actually start to develop like their own like niche. Like it's like moving away. I mean, you can already hear it in that music. It's not like completely like American or like completely British. It's inspired, but it's not completely like, you know, this. But we start moving away from that, and we take a band like Mexican band called La Maldita Vecindad, which is like, what would you say that? Like the damned neighborhood. They have this dope cover art though. Like we start hearing this like own style of whatever this is, like music. It's like this blend of ska or rock. I don't know what to call it, but here is Pachuco from the album El Circo. Yeah, from that, that's like, I think that's like very unique to this, I don't know, this time period, this type of rock, ska music. It's super high energy. But I mean, like, I would say that the 90s, like, I don't know, this is an opinion, but I would say that like during the 90s is like when, like, it's like rock in tu idioma, like rock in your language became like this like big marketing thing, this like big thing. And like, it became mainstream, is what I would say. This like band came out known as Maná, and these dudes like blew up like in like they started in like the late 80s, I'm pretty sure, but I'm pretty sure they blew up in like the 90s. And they have like, if you think of like Mexico or like music in Spanish, like rock music in Spanish, I think most people will think of Maná. Like I think that's just like that's it. Like they've had collaborations with like Santana, so like, or like other like popular pop, that's the key word. I think that's what I'm looking for. Pop. Like, they, like, it's, like, pop music. My mom, I mean, I don't really like them that much because, like, as my family says, they're too fresa, which is, like, they're too, like, you're, like, they're too cool. They're so cool, they're not cool. You know what I mean? They're too hip. Like, they're, like, too,
they're
like,
too hip.
They're too cool.
I hear you saying.
We're so cool. You know, like, we're too cool. Like,
they're extra.
No.
Fresa. Okay, no.
Okay, Fresa is also like preppy. That's like the preppy. Other type.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I appreciate you translating literally everything for me because I don't know how to speak.
It's funny because Fresa is just slang. Fresa literally means strawberry. So like without context,
that's
you're
so
just
good.
Like, yeah.
I love slang in other languages. Slang in French, there's this style of slang called verlan, which is you just invert the word's syllables. Verlan is an inversion of l'envers, which just means the inverse. So like, there's this popular French like house artist, and his name is Tromai, which is just an inversion of the word maestro. I'll bring a Laurent Danse at some point. I'll bring Stromae at some point.
Without even listening to the song, I haven't even listened to it, but off the top of my head, Oye Mi Amor by Maná is probably like really digestible. So here's a Shana Dark. Here we go. Here it is. Oye Mi Amor, it translates to like, hey my love. Mm-hmm. And like, it's pop. Like, now that I'm looking at it here, it says that it got like U.S. Billboard Latin pop album.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Position
that's...
2. Like, peak position number 2. So it was, like, pretty, like, popular. That's what I'm trying to get. They were, like...
That's a chart that I would imagine is at the time was dominated by Carlos Santana and Los Lobos. Like, exclusively. Like,
yeah. No other artists.
It's just you know? Los Lobos and Santana or Carlos Santana.
Yeah. Dang, there's just so much I could talk about, but let me just skip ahead. Let me end this. I'll put us out of our misery real quick. But I'd like to like talk about some of the bands that are like playing today that I think are kind of cool. And I really I'm admiring that a lot of these bands are like Chicanos too. So they're like from up here. There's this great band of like young, like I don't even know their kids, like young people, like probably 18. Or like probably like 20 or younger. They're called the Beach Goons, and
that's a great name.
Yeah, and they're doing like punk, like skate punk music, which is sick. And they're doing both English and Spanish. But I guess I wanted to. We're doing music in Spanish, so we're gonna listen to Chunti. I don't even know if that's Spanish. It might be slang, but here it is. Estás feliz. No me digan que me odian, ya no lo quiero oír. And yeah, this is a nice little indie track, is what I would call it. Like a little bit more indie. There's a lot of vibrato on those strings. So they're like, it sounds like, you know, like this. There's a visual. What do you call
yeah,
that?
For this, like, you know, this great visual aid you've provided us for this entirely audio medium.
<Yeah. laughs> There we go. Another great band doing a lot of music in Spanish too would be like the Red Pairs. They're also from California, also more Chicanos. You get away. Run away. And then finally, there's a really cool guy that I like that's doing like post-punk or post-surf. Let's get that term going around, post-surf.
Post-surf.
It would be El Último Vecino, The Last Neighbor. It's a weird name.
These names are really cool to me as someone who doesn't speak Spanish, because when they're translated, they're just like, oh, that's totally a band name. Like, it's just like it's got band name energy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and then Tu Casa Nueva. There you go.
Nice. So, I mean, we always ask all of our guests, Alex, about like what we've been listening to. You know, it's always a good discussion. Maybe highlight new music, highlight music that people don't know about, highlight, you know, what you like and stuff. I'll go right ahead and just test the water of this conversation. I, this week, have been listening to, revisiting an album that I come back to so frequently. I come back to this album 2 or 3 times a year. It's the Transatlanticism Demos album, which is a Death Cab for Cutie album. Death Cab for Cutie is a very, like, well-known like indie alternative rock band from the early 2000s, and they still make music and it's still pretty good. You've probably heard several of their songs, audience. And they, one of their really, really popular albums that kind of like got them into the mainstream was an album called Transatlanticism, and it has just a lot of really good indie tracks. And they, in for the 10-year anniversary of the album, in 2013, they released an album of demos of the songs. So all of the like demos and like kind of like a scratch pad of all these songs. They're all like acoustic, whereas everything else is more electric. And I really enjoy it. I actually enjoy it more than I enjoy the original album, although I love the original album. And I think that the like crystalline form of this album is... the demo version of the song called The Sound of Settling. And here's that. I've got a hunger, twisting my stomach into knots.
that my tongue is tied off. My brain's repeating, if you've got an impulse, let it out. But they never make it past my mind.
I think the reason that I really enjoy the demo version of these songs is that the originals have this, like, this really soft and personal message that is accompanied by a little bit more quick or upbeat or, you know, like, colorful sonic aesthetic. And the demos albums are a lot softer. It's a lot more personal. It's a lot more intimate. And I think that, especially Sound of Settling, which is, like, a song that's clearly deeply personal, I think that this version works better than the original one does. That's why I like it a lot. Alex, what have you been listening to this week?
So I've recently had a new entry on my sad playlist.
Fantastic. End of the podcast is a really good time to make everything sad again.
It's fantastic. So a few weeks ago, it was my birthday, and it was Russian themed because my girlfriend really wanted to make it Russian themed, like, you know, Russian food and such. And she's like, why don't you play some Russian music? And I played some Russian rock. And there is this band named DDT, which is a really popular Russian rock band. And they have a song called Blizzard. And I've been listening to that song pretty much, I wouldn't say nonstop, but on repeat for a lot of time. Like, whenever I drive from work, I listen to it and I sing along with it because it's just something vocal that lets me work through whatever happened that day. But the song is basically, it's a man's conversation with Blizzard. So he's talking to the Blizzard as if Blizzard was a person. And
not the game development studio Blizzard.
No,
right?
Not the game. It has nothing to do with Overwatch. No, it's all about the Blizzard, the falling snow, the snow that falls heavily. That's what I mean by Blizzard. Here is the chorus of Blizzard. Закрой глаза и вернись, не пропади, но растай, да карие поклонись, мое окно отогрей, пусти по полю весной, не доживи, но созрей. And so that's the song I've been listening to. And the other thing that I've been listening to was the Sorrow and Extinction, which is the album by Pallbearer, which is not new to me, but I've been listening to a lot of it simply because, getting back to your nostalgia corner, for some reason, Pallbearer, which I have not heard until 2016, makes me feel nostalgic.
There's music has the propensity to do that, and that's what I'm trying to establish in my segment of this show.
Yes. So Pallbearer, Sorrow and Extinction, I would absolutely recommend it. My favorite song in that album is The Ghost I Used to Be, and here's a little clip of that. That's what I've been listening to lately.
Okay. Those are awesome and things that I've never heard of. Beta, what about you? What's on your radar right now?
I got this new album from the Brian Jonestown Massacre called Pol Pot's Pleasure Penthouse on cassette. And
God, that's a really, really good album name.
Yeah.
You said Pol Pot's Pleasure Penthouse?
Pleasure Penthouse. That's right.
Beautiful name.
And two cool tracks, but actually, no, just one. I'm listening to Psychedelic Sunday, and it's track 9. It's awesome. Here it is.
Sweet. What do you like about that, Beto?
Oh, man. So I love the Brian Jonestown Massacre, and they, like, change the sound a lot. But this has that, like, old-school 60s, like, garage rock, like, heavy psychedelic vibe, though. Like, it's a psychedelic Sunday, so they're tripping.
Nice.
All right, so this wraps up the Out of Phase podcast brought to you by PSPS. I'm Beto Carrasco.
And I'm Drew Havner.
And we'd like to thank our guest, Alex, for being here with us today.
I'm happy to
thank
be here.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you guys for inviting me. I really appreciate that. It was
hell
fun.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll catch you next time.